The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Wednesday, January 15th, 20, into the second of our three-hour tour here. It is a delight to welcome back to the show Congressman, Arizona Congressman from the 5th Congressional District and the Chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, Andy Biggs. Andy, Happy New Year, first off.
Oh, Happy New Year to you, Seth.
We're off and running. But I guess it frees up a little time in the House of Representatives for you now that the impeachment articles have finally been transmitted to the Senate. I watched Nancy Pelosi this morning, and it was really odd. Did you watch her press conference this morning?
Fortunately, I had to be in a science meeting and other meetings, so thank goodness for that.
Oh, my gosh. She was summoning up the imagery of Jefferson and Lincoln and Thomas Paine and Paul Revere and gave us a lecture on the poetry of time. It almost felt like this is what a nervous breakdown looks like in public. I don't mean that in a silly way. I just have no idea what she was trying to summon up. But, you know, the American people got, I guess, what, about a four-week break from all of this. And I guess we're now going to, what, retread everything you guys had to hear in the Senate. Is that what's next? What, you tell me, what are we going to watch next week?
What you're going to watch is this is going to go over, and my sources tell me. Now, and there's pretty good sources, but you know, don't hold me to this. But Tuesday, there's going to be some debating and going on. Tuesday afternoon, beginning at 1 o'clock Eastern, some debating with regard to rules. And then on Wednesday, you should have the House managers, the gang that couldn't shoot straight, yep, is going to be there to present their evidence. Now, you're going to hear everything that you heard from the crazy law professors in the House Judiciary Committee, but now they're going to add all kinds of stuff in there. I mean, you've seen that they claim they've got new evidence from a myriad of sources. And I will say this for Susan Collins of Maine, who's not usually one I agree with terribly, but she said it very succinctly today. She said, well, they tell us they've got new evidence. What that means is they rushed their proceeding in the House.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't be over here in the Senate because they weren't really done after all.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Exactly right. And good for her for saying that. This is why I think we're going to have a unanimity of Republicans here in the Senate on this question, just as there was in the House of Representatives, Andy.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I guess is going to have people asking questions for a couple weeks to come, I hope they're asking this question, is why Nancy Pelosi held on to this for nearly 4 weeks. What was her gain here? And I have to tell you, it's not a conspiracy theory to say when you think about all the possible motives, all the possible options, if there's any hint, if there's a hungry journalist out there that wants to look into this, if there's any hint that she did this to help Joe Biden by taking three senators off the campaign trail, that's true obstruction of Congress. Now, I can't obviously prove that, but when you look at the range of motives and possibilities, given the constitutional crisis she said we were in, I think a journalist really ought to do some digging here. Am I off base in thinking that?
No. I mean, obviously, we don't know what her thinking was.
Right.
But the reality is it's very difficult and undermines her case to say that this must be done today because President Trump is such an egregious threat to the United States that he must be removed and then hang on to it. When the only things that seem to coincide with this, there's the State of the Union. So maybe she was thinking, oh, if we hold it long enough, we can embarrass him at the State of the Union.
Something she's never said, by the way, right? That's a possible motive, but she never mentioned that. But
right.
Yeah, go ahead.
So that could be one.
Right.
But the other one is, and I thought there were still five U.S. senators in that race, but who knows? But, you know, none of them really have a lot of traction anyway. But but they cannot campaign.
Right.
But Joe Biden can continue
right.
to campaign.
And right.
And a lot of people are saying, well, maybe that's why she did it, because there is no rationale. I mean, the other rationale that I've heard is that, well, she was trying to find additional evidence. I mean, think about that.
Well, that's an odd one. I mean, yes, she is trying to say that, but that's an odd one. The indictment was handed down, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the reality is they already voted on impeachment.
Yeah.
They already said what they had. They presented their case to the body. And
which they kept telling us was rock solid. And
it was rock solid. You know, we don't need anything else,
right,
Seth. Come on, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they kept saying the evidence is uncontested.
Right.
And I will say that my colleague Debbie Lesko said something that I had also said before, which is simply this. Well, I contest it.
Yeah, this isn't
it. Maybe uncontested means something different in your fantasy world, but I'm contesting the facts in this case.
As is the president of Ukraine, strangely enough, right?
Exactly.
No,
yeah.
This is the most contested. Now, Nancy Pelosi was also saying today how historical this moment was. And I suppose, in a sense, she's right. I mean, it's only happened, this will be the third time an impeachment has gone to the Senate. But there's some other interesting things that are historical here, too. Never before has an impeachment or a set of impeachment charges, Andy, correct? You tell me where I'm wrong. Not included an actual felony, an actual illegal act under the federal code. That's new. This is the first time that's happened. No,
mm-hmm.
No,
that's right.
No U.S. code violation. Two, I think it's a I know it's the first time that it was totally, completely, 100% voted upon by one party. There was
correct.
No bipartisanship from any dissenting votes amongst Republicans.
That's right. That's exactly right.
I mean,
right.
This is a highly unusual thing, Andy.
Well, don't forget this, too. All the witnesses who testified, whether they were called by the defendants or the Republicans, there was only one who claimed to have any direct evidence. So this is the first time you've had nobody with direct evidence testify. And of all of those witnesses, again, brought to you by the Democrats, and Republicans were not allowed to bring anybody, but they were brought to you by the Democrats, everyone said they saw no evidence, they had no knowledge, direct knowledge of any kind of quid pro quo, any kind of bribery, high crime and misdemeanor. They didn't have any personal knowledge of evidence of any criminal conduct. Now, imagine that. Now, if I'm trying that case before a reasonable jury, you know what I'm saying? Hey, guess what? Every witness said that they didn't see – all their expert witnesses and their witnesses said they had no evidence of a crime. Didn't have evidence of crime. They were all maybe uncomfortable or whatever. They thought it was bad, but no evidence of a crime. Even Vindman, who was their star witness. And then you throw that into this and say, and by the way, the deadline for giving the money to the Ukraine, which is part of the reason they weren't too concerned about it, was September 30th of this year, and they got the money on September 11th
right.
of this year.
Right.
So the money was given on time, as required by Congress. And so you have no violations anywhere.
You have no violations anywhere. And then you have this notion that it harmed, she keeps saying it harmed our national security. I have yet to hear what that, I don't even, do people just say things in your
yes.
world in Washington? They just say things that have no basis in any fact. How did keeping $390 million for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, how did that harm our national security?
Well, here's the only time national security was harmed. It is when you had someone who was put on the phone to monitor and keep track
right.
of what was in those phone conversations, who leaked it to the whistleblower.
Right, right.
Who, not in a SCIF as required by law,
right.
and not on a need-to-know basis as stated by Vindman himself,
right.
and not by the same classification of security clearance. That's a felony.
Yeah.
And then when that gets leaked out by Adam Schiff to the world, now you've undermined President Trump's, and any future president, by the way, their ability to have high-level conversations with leaders of foreign states to discuss important issues. Because if you're Angela Merkel right now, are you going to have a conversation with President Trump about the situation in Iran, realizing it might be leaked out by the intelligence apparatus who monitors the calls of the President of the United States? Heavens no.
No kidding. You know, I noticed Nancy Pelosi took a little bit of joy, and I guess there's some kind of honor in having served in monumental moments. She talked about how Zoe Lofgren was a staffer in the Nixon impeachment and sat through the Clinton impeachment.
Mm-hmm.
Others have sat through certain impeachments. I'm going to guess going forward, it's just going to be kind of a cold thing that you sat through this impeachment. You were so crucial to it, because it really is about nothing, Andy. Don't you kind of feel kind of given kind of
yeah.
left in the lurch here? You were given an empty impeachment to brag about on your watch.
Well, you know what? To see the basically abuse of power that I've seen, I will never forget.
That's
that.
That's the monumental thing. We shall never let anyone forget. Well, God bless you, Andy Piggs. You are the best. Happy New Year. May your voice grow stronger. May your strength continue to be just. You know how much we love you, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Seth. Thanks to all your listeners, too.
Thank you, Andy. I had occasion over the weekend. That's probably the wrong way to say it. I had occasion, but I did to watch it. I was just scanning the television, you know, flipping the channels. And the old episode, obviously, to be tautological, an old episode of the Monkees TV show came on. Would have been from, 1966, 1967. Bill, have you ever seen it? Have you ever seen it? It's really amazing how stupid it was, how really very, very, very stupid it was. But I guess clever for those guys. The music is fun, and some of it was written by Neil Diamond. Some of it was written by Carole King. The concept, I guess, had its own brilliance to it. But it was just the way we entertained ourselves in the 60s. It's a very popular show. So popular, do you know this? So popular that David Bowie had to change his name from David Jones to David Bowie because Davy Jones of the Monkees was so much more popular. When that guy was more popular than David Jones. Speaking of David Bowie, I saw something, another blast from the past. I was watching an old Kevin Costner movie. It might have been his first, No Way Out. It had Imam in it. Wasn't she David Bowie's wife? I believe so. I think I have my cultural contexts correct here. Here's someone who knows something about the culture, Rob in Surprise. Hi, Rob.
Well, Seth, I mean, you just brought up a couple of really cool points. I have been watching that channel that shows the Monkees, and I think it's just on Saturday.
Oh, was it? So you know what I was doing Saturday.
Oh, absolutely.
It was followed by The Love Boat.
Oh, okay. Well, I missed that. Even though I'm old, I still don't want to watch that with Kevin.
Well, I'll spoil. Let me just do a spoiler alert. A couple in love gets on the boat, has a fight, and guess what? By the time they leave the boat, they're back in love.
Well, not just that, but these are all sort of seasoned citizen actors and actresses.
It had an older person. It had a younger person. This episode I watched, it had Joan Rivers.
Yep.
And it had a very young, must have been in his 20s, Adam Arkin, Alan Arkin's son.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, who sang the Love Boat song? Was that Jack Jones? I can't recall.
Was it Jack Jones?
I don't know.
I think it might have been. Yeah, I think it might. That sounds right to me. That sounds right to
me. Yeah, I met him a few years ago. Very nice
One
guy.
Wants to say Paul Williams, but I think Paul Williams wrote it.
He probably wrote it.
Yeah,
he was a prolific writer.
Yeah.
Along with the Monkees, I think Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart also did a lot of Monkees songs too. They were a big team back in the mid '60s, writing songs like that.
Yeah.
And then you mentioned Imam and No Way Out, great movie. And you're right, she was the roommate of who was the
yeah actor? Exactly
Sean
that
Young.
Woman we've all forgotten. Right. Exactly.
Yeah, Sean Young.
Yeah, Sean Young. Yeah. Sean Young. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Who was the lover of Gene Hackman, the Secretary of Defense, and Kevin Costner.
Heck of a movie. Pretty good movie for the 80s.
Oh, a very good movie, especially the ending.
Yeah, which we don't want to do a spoiler alert to.
Now, great intro, though, by the way. Now, I was interested in several things.
Yeah, we did. We covered those. We covered some landscape there, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
I didn't care about and didn't watch the Democratic debates, but I did notice that again. You mentioned it earlier. They don't talk about freedom and liberty. They don't have the American flag. And then you mentioned, you know, the Ron Reagan.
That Ron Reagan ad, which ran twice, must have cost a few million to buy that time.
Well, and I think I called you about that a few weeks ago.
You did.
Ago,
you did on the last iteration, yeah.
Yeah, it was like done in 2015 or something. But, I mean, if this doesn't tell you everything you need to know about the Democratic Party, then there's no hope. They're godless. They're, there are a lot of things, but they're not pro-American. The impeachment thing too. I don't really care because there's no high crimes and misdemeanors, right. No matter what everybody says.
Right.
And of course, the House impeachment managers are all Democrats, including Schiff and Nadler.
Right.
I mean, come on.
Right.
You know,
right.
That's just
you can
insane.
Say you're Napoleon. It doesn't mean you are.
That's exactly right. And so I think they've exposed themselves for everybody.
I think
see.
They look terrible.
Oh, they do.
You obviously, you're news consumption 1%. I mean, you obviously follow the news more than 99% of the American people just by virtue of, you know, what you say, you know, and I, you know, what you tune into. And I can tell you, I think for the vast majority of Americans, I'm going to guess if they pick up a paper tomorrow morning and get this head, they're going to be saying this again, or this is still going on, or why is this still going on? I'm guessing they thought this was long over.
Oh, yeah. And then, you know, there are things I think really, really important that nobody seems to talk about, such as, you know, the Chinese trade deal that Trump did.
Yep.
And what I thought was really good was the Russian government is resigning because Putin is proposing constitutional changes which will allow him to remain in power for a long, long time.
Right.
And then we don't really hear much about the Iranian people crying to be free.
Nope.
We don't hear anything about the whistleblower, do we?
Nope. I'm gonna have our favorite Iranian activist on after you here, Erica. She's gonna give us an update.
Erica's coming back.
Yeah, yeah. I want to know what's going on. I know something is by virtue of the fact that Erica Kosrae, by virtue of the fact that the media is not covering it, you know something good is happening.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And so that's kind of important, too. And I do love Erica's, her looks and what she says. But and also with the Democratic debates, they don't even mention the Constitution, even though Nancy Pelosi does, but she doesn't really believe in it. And whenever we look at all these longtime politicians, especially on the Democrat side, especially with, you know, Nancy Pelosi, Dianne Feinstein, Chuckie Schumer, they're not doing anything to really represent their constituents in terms of making their constituents' lives better.
Right.
You know, San Francisco being a primary example of how bad it all is.
Right.
But I think that's the only thing I wanted to mention was that, you know, the media is not really covering some things that are far more important than all the nonsense going on with this impeachment stuff. It drives me nuts. And I don't believe for a minute that I'm, you know, following the news much more than most people.
No, I think you are. No, I think you are. I don't think most people would know all this stuff. I just don't.
Well, I think you do.
Well, you and I are probably in about the same category, but, you know, it's kind of I have to and you love it, and I love it too. It's important. Right. Politics is the most important thing because it's how we organize our lives and the kind of communities we want around which to
organize.
Well,
and not only that, Seth, but I think it affects a lot of people's lives economically because a lot, not most of what goes on in Washington, D.C. involves the redistribution of taxpayer money.
Which is what this is about at bottom. That's what this
ultimate.
Right. This is ultimately what exactly this is about. They don't like Donald Trump's plans. They have said it between the lines and in the interstices of the microphones that this is about not having Trump in office. That's why Nancy Pelosi says he will be impeached. He'll be gone either way, either by election or impeachment. Either way, he's down because she impeached him. That's what this is about, so that they can do their redistribution, which I want to say more about later in the show, too, based on something I said yesterday. I'm Seth. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. It is a delight to bring back Erica Khosrai. She is an Iranian-born American Middle East expert, activist, and voice for religious minorities, especially women and children. We had her on last week when she was posting some wonderful videos and enlightening videos on Facebook and that were flying around on social media and including Twitter to get us the real story out of Iran. Erica, your reporting has been crucial for us to understand what's going on there. And I suspect some good things are going on in Iran based on the fact that the news media has stopped covering what's going on in Iran. By now, we were supposed to be in World War III. Welcome back to the Airways of Phoenix, Erica.
Thank you.
You bet.
Yeah.
I've been following you on Twitter. I'm urging as many people who are interested as possible to follow you on Twitter. And Tell us what has been transpiring in Iran over the past week or so.
Sure, of course. Despite the propaganda that some media outlets try to perpetuate out there, that this is going to cause major reactions and result in World War III. In fact, we've seen brave Iranian protesters once again come out to the street to show the world the true face of the Iranian people. The funeral of Qasem Soleimani was shown as this, look, they're saying death to America.
Yeah.
The Iranian protesters have come out and, ripped down the picture of Qasem Soleimani from the banners that have been put up, ripping his pictures off his walls, burning his pictures, and putting them out on social media. And trying to show the world, that he in fact was a terrorist, and they in fact do hate him. The regime has tried to feed the Iranian people this propaganda that America is this great Satan, and they paint the American flag and the Israeli flag on the doorsteps of government buildings, school buildings, universities, and then in the last recent in the last few days. Iranian students have, put out videos of where the protesters refuse to walk on the American and Israeli flag.
I just think that gives me chills. I've watched some of it. It gives me chills.
Well, yeah. And look, and what happened? President Trump tweeted out in Farsi. It circulated. That Farsi tweet was the largest number of tweets ever in the history of Farsi tweet.
Well over 200,000 by the last time I checked a few days ago. This was a monumental thing, yes.
And it was so empowering for the Iranian people to hear the president of the United States speak to them and basically put the regime on notice. We're watching you. And, they started shooting protesters, but they were very clever in how they did it. They were only shooting them in their legs so that they wouldn't die. And, of course, they've sent out their anti-militia or anti-riot militia out to the streets to intimidate. And unfortunately, sadly, many of the families who lost family members in the Ukrainian airliner that went down are being intimidated by the regime, telling them that if they talk to the media, that they will not get the remains of their family members.
Oh, my gosh.
And they intimidated one particular family into basically calling their family member a martyr for the regime on state television, forcing the father to, identify his child as a martyr for the regime. So this is the face of the regime and the face of the Iranian people who refuse to desecrate the American and the Israeli flag.
Wow. Wow. Now, a lot of this, it turns out, maybe it was timing or maybe it was event-based, turns out to have happened subsequent to Iran government officials admitting that they actually did shoot down the Ukrainian airliner. Did that leave an opening for some of these people to take to the streets in this regime of fear? Is that a lie being uncovered is often a crack in a tyranny for the people on the streets to feel empowered? Was that coincidental, or do you think that was event-based?
I think that it was two catalysts that really caused this protest. One of them was you know, the elimination of Qasem Soleimani definitely empowered a lot of people in the Middle East. In fact, I believe that we've got protests in Lebanon right now.
Yeah, I'm hitting the music. I have the music because we're going into a break. This was a short segment. I'd like to keep you for a longer one if you can stay with us for one more segment, Erica.
Sure.
That would be absolutely wonderful. We'll pick up on that point when we come back. It is a delight to have with us Erica Khosrai. She is an Iranian-born American Middle East expert, activist, voice for religious minorities, especially women and children. And this is where you get the real story. We'll be right back with Erica. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Delighted to have with us Erica Khosrai, an Iranian-born American Middle East expert and activist, giving us the inside scoop of what is taking place in Iran. I was curious that for all the war that we were supposed to be engaged in by now, given the hand-wringing from the left and the conventional reporting out of Iran, and then all of it just kind of went quiet once the protests started turning against the Iranian regime. I knew that something good was going on, and we had to bring back Erica to tell us a little bit about it. Erica, you were saying things were fomenting in Lebanon, too, right before the break, yes?
Yes. Yesterday, there was anti-Hezbollah protests going on, and, of course, they were met with a lot of crackdown. We're getting some videos from inside the country that are circulating on social media. But of course, you know, you're not going to see that on mainstream media, unfortunately. I really, truly believe that, you know, the elimination of Qasem Soleimani has empowered the pro-democracy movement and the freedom fighters of the Middle East. And I don't believe this is the end.
I'm glad to
so
hear
I'm
that.
Encouraged.
No, I'm glad to hear that. People dismissed when Donald Trump tweeted out his good wishes to the Iranian protesters in Farsi, some people dismissed it. But you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the name, Anatoly or Natan Sharansky. He was one of the famous dissidents, of course, right,
that
the Soviet Union in prison.
I know exactly who Natan Sharansky
is. Yes, right. So when he was in prison in the Soviet Union and Ronald Reagan gave the Evil Empire speech of 1983, he said it was the most glorious day of all of our prisoners' lives because finally we realized someone gave a damn about us in the important
That's
country
right.
called America.
That's right. You know what? The U.S. president, I believe, is going to go down in history. I mean, Donald Trump's going to go down in Iranian history as a national hero because he has stood up to the bully, you know, that is the Islamic Republic. You know, they are a menace in the Middle East. And it is time for, I mean, the world to see them for who they are. They are weak at home. They're running out of money. We need to stay the course. And, you know, policies that on human rights should not be partisan.
Right.
We have to take a firm stand against the regime. That's my belief.
For those that want to raise their eyebrows and say, you know, Seth, Erica, you guys are nuts. Well, maybe everything else has been tried, but let me just tell you who agrees with Erica Khosrai, and I'm glad he agrees with her, and that's Thomas Friedman. He opened up an op-ed with the sentence, "One day they may name a street after President Trump in Tehran." I mean,
absolutely.
That's not what we're looking for, but great if it exposes what's going on here and that finally someone stood up for the dissidents in Iran. Remember in 2009 during the Green Revolution, there was a report in the New York Times Magazine. I think the reporter's name was Robert or Roger Cohen. He said they were saying on the streets, "Where's Obama? Where's Obama? Where's
yes.
Obama? Where's this great community organizer? Where was he?" Well, he was saying he wouldn't meddle, which when you say you're not going to meddle and one side have guns and one side doesn't, you know which side they're on. He shut it down
with
that statement.
The protesters were in the street saying, "Obama, Obama,
yeah.
Are you with them or with us?"
Right.
And unfortunately, you know, Obama turned his back on the Iranian people. And today, we need policy based on principle. We can't cater to a regime that is the world's leading terror state for the 40 years. We can't allow such an unstable regime to obtain and use nuclear weapons. So, you know, we need to stay the course, and we need to continue to allow the Iranian people to have a voice, and we expect the international community and media outlets to continue to amplify their voices, those who are fighting for freedom and democracy. There are thousands of political prisoners in Iran today, and I promise you that President Trump's message has gotten to them.
Good.
So I thank you.
Good.
I'll
do what little I can. I was marching in 2009 in D.C. I'll do what little I can here. I was happy to see some of the stuff you're tweeting out and retweeting. You retweeted something about a famous artist in Iran. I'll probably get the name pronunciation wrong. I'm sorry if I do, but Tarana Aladousti, evidently a very, very famous artist in Iran, and she's been saying, "We are not citizens, we are hostages." This is the kind
That's
of voice
right.
people need to listen to, right?
That's right, and there are more people defecting and unwilling to identify themselves with this regime. And I think that once the people that are closest to power start defecting, you're going to see this regime topple. So I'm very, very encouraged by the course that the people of Iran are taking, and I thank you for giving their voice a platform and allowing me to speak on their behalf.
Well, absolutely. It's one of the saddest things in the world to see such a great people so immiserated, so imprisoned by a veil of tyranny that is so obviously a veil of tyranny and so obviously a disruption to what we call civilization that we can't be more on their side. I thought really it was probably the worst thing the Obama presidency did was turning his back on those dissenters. While he would meddle with other allies, he wouldn't meddle on behalf of the dissenters in Iran. I really think it was one of the worst things he could have done. And if anyone cares about human rights, they're going to listen to you, Erica, and they're going to listen to these voices in Iran who have been crying for 30, 40 years now for just a semblance of not even the status quo ante, but a semblance of governing themselves. We say we want it for ourselves. We founded our country that way. We should be supportive of it for others, especially when the alternative is crushing Islamic terrorism. This should not be a hard call. It is amazing to me that it is.
Yes, absolutely. You know, a threat to freedom anywhere is a threat to freedom everywhere. Mm-hmm. We must support the people around the world to respect each other and defend the rights, especially of vulnerable women and children, no matter what their religion or ethnic group is. And I think the American people stand with advocates of democracy and human rights in the Middle East. You know, Iraqi protesters in Baghdad, the Lebanese protesters, the people of Iran, people from Northeast Syria. You know, I'm encouraged by the course that President Trump is taking, and I think that we as Americans need to support our president and stop allowing, you know, this hatred for him to cause us to demonize each other. It's not helpful.
Yeah, be on the side of freedom. Yeah. It shouldn't be a hard choice.
That's right.
It shouldn't be a hard choice. Right. If you believe in moral clarity, it's easy to see who stands for freedom and who doesn't, both in Iran and here in America, who's standing with the people of Iran and who's standing with the mullahs of Iran. Erica, you're wonderful. I'm going to keep bothering you. I hope that's okay. We're going to keep calling
Absolutely.
On you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for continuing to give us a voice. I really appreciate it. Have a good evening, and God bless your listeners.
Thank you, Erica. Erica Sagar Khosrai. Follow her on Twitter, folks. Follow her on Facebook and retweet what she tweets and retweets. Let's get the message out there. What the conventional wisdom from the conventional reporters says about Iran isn't necessarily what's going on in Iran. It may be what the mullahs want to tell you in Iran, but then ask yourselves, why is it the mullahs turn off the internet in Iran? They had their Richard Falks, too, in the 1970s. He was the Princeton professor who wrote for the New York Times that we can trust Ayatollah Khomeini. He will be a force for modernism. Well, there's too many Richard Falks and not enough Ericas. That's why we bring out the Ericas. I'm Seth. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. I am Seth. If you're like me, you work in an office, and if you're like me and you travel, if you're like me and you don't eat as well as you wish you could, you're subject to all kinds of colds and flus, you really want balance of nature. Take my word for it. With Balance of Nature, you get tens of thousands of vital nutrients from 100% whole food plants, fruits, and vegetables. The easiest thing in the world to take. You just take your three capsules with a glass of water, a glass of juice. If you don't like capsules and they are vegetarian, you can open them up and sprinkle it on some food or sprinkle it in a drink. A daily dose of Balance of Nature capsules has 10 servings of 31 different fruits and vegetables. Don't wait to see what getting over 10 servings of these fruits and vegetables every day can do for you. Right now, Balance of Nature is offering free shipping and 35% off any new preferred order. Start your journey to better health today. Call 800-246-8751 or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code BALANCE. The dueling press conferences today, Nancy Pelosi announcing the impeachment managers and that she is going to, quote-unquote, march the impeachment articles over to the Senate. And then Donald Trump talking about trade negotiations with China. I said it with John Dombrowski earlier, and I'll say it again now because it just really was quite interesting to me that that in the White House today, supporting Donald Trump, he mentioned them were Henry Kissinger, among others, Stephen Schwarzman, the head of Blackstone, Ajay Banga, the president of MasterCard, among other huge financial Chinese and Chinese expert dignitaries. And it's just really interesting to me. When I heard him say it, I was driving around in the car and I wanted to write down some of these names. I went to search on CNN. I went to search in the New York Times. They did cover the press conference. They didn't mention that Henry Kissinger was there supporting President Trump. They didn't mention the head of Blackstone, the head of MasterCard was there supporting what President Trump was doing on the China trade deal that he announced. Did you know that for all the media telling you that farmers got hit hard by Donald Trump and his tariffs with China, that President Trump has an all-time high approval rating amongst farmers of 82%, according to a survey by the Farm Journal, A.G. Webb? No, you didn't know that. You didn't know that. The bias is in what the media does not report. All right, folks, we're heading into hour three of our three-hour tour. 602-508-0960. That's 602-5080-960. Anything on your mind, it's your show. We'll be right back.